Welcome to State of the State, the monthly podcast of the Michigan State University Institute for Public Policy and Social Research, hosted by our good friends here at WKER Studios. My name is Arnold Weinfeld. I'm Associate Director at the Institute, and with us today, as usual, is MSU economist Dr. Charlie Ballard, and we're pleased, actually, to welcome back, after an absence, IPSR Director Dr. Matt Grossman, who's been on sabbatical the last year doing research and writing, actually has a new book coming out here later this fall called Red State Blues. Well, we've been joined now by Dr. Nathan Burrows, who, as I mentioned, is a researcher at Michigan State University in the College of Education, and also brings a unique perspective as a member of the Lansing Board of Education. He's done some research on the issue of substitute teachers in Michigan, and it's been an issue that's certainly been bubbling to the surface here over the last two or three years, the use of substitute teachers in the classroom across the state, in line with the comments about a general, quote, teacher shortage. Nathan's work, along with others on the project, was funded through IPSR's Michigan Applied Public Policy Research Grants, which are small seed funds that we deliver to faculty across campus to assist them with research pertaining to topical public policy issues. And as I noted, certainly the substitute teacher issue is one of those. So Nathan, welcome.
Hi.
Why don't you tell us a bit about your report and your findings and recommendations?
Oh, great. Thank you. So I feel like I should mention that the other people who worked on the project were Jacqueline Gardner and Dirk Zuschlag, who are graduate students in the Michigan State University School of Ed. So we did a survey of superintendents all across the state of Michigan. We had about 40% of the superintendents who responded. MASA, the Michigan Association of School Administrators, helped us with this. So that was one of the reasons we had such good turnout. We had all the biggest districts in the state. And we asked them a variety of questions about their perceptions about whether there was a substitute shortage and what they were trying to do to address it. You may not be surprised, but it was nice to find that there's incredibly broad-based perceptions that there is a serious shortage by the people who responded to the survey. About 63 or 64% of the superintendents said that they couldn't fill substitute positions multiple times a week. So that meant they had to resort to either distributing students among different classrooms, therefore increasing class sizes for that day, pulling administrators in, or pulling in interventionists who are supposed to target at-risk or other disadvantaged kids. And all of those have a very disruptive effect on the schools, as you might imagine. So that was the first big finding that we had. The second one is that the vast majority, virtually all, had said that the supply of substitutes had really gone down in the last 5 years or so. Most said that they had an increasing demand, but the real difficulty appeared to be in the supply. So that's the real challenge that they're grappling with out there. The surprising thing is there's some differences in emphasis where it's more of a problem or less of a problem, but that it wasn't just a southern, you know, southeastern, southwestern Michigan problem, or just an urban school district, or just a high poverty school district problem. It's something that really seems to affect virtually every kind of school district in the state.
Mm-hmm. And given the survey results and your findings, what are some of the recommendations that you had within the report?
Well, I mean, the first one, which is always what we researchers say, is that we need to do more research. but here is particularly the case. The reason we did this work is because we know so little about the substitute labor market. There isn't a lot of good, rigorous research done in this area. So one of the really challenging parts for us is that there isn't good, accessible, usable state data that's collected so that you can sort of figure out, okay, objectively, is there a problem, or what are the dimensions of the problem? So collecting better data at the state level would be a fantastic step in the right direction. I also think we need to think really seriously, take a close look about a lot of superintendents said that their former supply of substitute teachers was coming from retired teachers. And what they told me was that changes to the state retirement law made it much more difficult for retired teachers to come back and teach in classrooms. So taking a look at that law, maybe putting a working group together to closely examine it might be very beneficial. And the other part, and this is something that has actually been coming out sort of as I've been talking to people in the last few weeks, is we might want to seriously think about treating substitutes not just as an add-on to the general pool of teachers, but to treat it as it's sort of maybe not its own career path, but its own distinct component of what it means to be a teacher. So we have people who have the right kind of training and predispositions who are focused on that rather than just counting on retired teachers or people who haven't gotten a teaching job yet. Because in the past, the supply of substitutes was coming from those two populations, and we just don't have this huge glut of people wanting to go into teaching in Michigan anymore. So we're going to have to really come to grips with that.
One question, and Charlie and Matt, please jump in, is how is the process to acquire substitute teachers impacted? Because it used to be that school districts themselves had their own mm-hmm. pool, right, that they could
right.
make calls to. They knew people. And now nearly, I think, every school district contracts that out. Mm-hmm. There are just a couple of firms that actually mm-hmm. do this kind of work.
Right. So that was the big surprise. We knew that there were some big companies that recruited and supplied substitutes to school districts. I wasn't aware that virtually all, I think it was 97% of the districts that we talked to now contracted out. And the vast majority of those are just using one company. And it's important to note that the company can't sort of require people to go work at a particular school district. At least that's my understanding. We're still looking at that in some more detail. But they can't guarantee fill rates that you're going to have a substitute there. There has to be people who live in the area who are interested in working in those schools who are going to be available. So it's been a major change. At first it was a particular school district, and then it was the intermediate school districts, and now it's being contracted out. Some districts are experimenting with some changes. For example, going back to handling it themselves by hiring sort of permanent substitutes that they can then deploy to any school because they know they're going to have a certain number of vacancies every single day. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of a solution which might work in some larger school districts. I know that my school district, Lansing, has been working on that. But we're going to have to be very, very creative about how we tackle this problem. Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of possible approaches. If you, mm-hmm. if you don't have enough people,
right.
what do you do? Well, one approach that we've taken that I don't necessarily believe is moving in the right direction is to lower the requirements for the
right.
substitute teachers. The economist in me says another possibility is to pay more. And that's one of the big differences between Massachusetts and Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
They just have a larger budget. Mm-hmm. They're willing to, they are more affluent to begin with,
mm-hmm.
partly because of these things that have happened in the past. And then they are willing to raise enough taxes to have a very strong system. And we have chosen in Michigan to dramatically reduce the fraction of our economy that goes to taxes with predictable results. Do you think there's any possibility that we'll be able to pay more teachers, pay teachers more?
Well, I mean, I can't speak directly to paying all teachers more. I do know that in the past, it looked like there were a lot of school districts in the same geographic area who tended to stick to the same amount of money that they were paying subs. It appears that a lot of those agreements are breaking down. So you're seeing a lot more competition. But we're not talking about big increases right now. We're talking about an extra $10 a day some might be looking at health benefits. So there's been some change. But yeah, from an economics point of view, okay, well, if there's a greater demand, then the cost of subs should go up. But for understandable reasons, given that the tight budgets that school districts have, putting on my school board member hat for a minute, that there's not a lot of flexibility in the budget. It would require a major financial investment from the state to support that.
Right. Tell us about the implications of this and what we know from previous research. Is this just about getting bodies in the classroom for babysitting, or are we expecting learning to occur on these days? Are these short-term problems, or are they extended periods where kids would be out their teachers? And what do we know about what that has implications for student learning for other outcomes?
Well, this is really interesting. We do know that having teachers out of the classroom more days has an impact on student learning.
A bad impact on student learning.
So students who have a teacher who's absent from the classroom more days don't tend to do well on standardized tests. And that has a particular impact when it's before the test. So if it's right before a test happens, then the student scores tend to be lower. What we don't know a lot about is, you know, is it just the fact that the teacher is out of the classroom that's having a negative effect? Could you have higher quality substitutes? Would that have a mitigating effect on student learning? So maybe they aren't going to do as well as their regular classroom teacher, but maybe it's better than just plopping them in front of a video for an hour and letting them watch Disney. So that's sort of that's something we should probably guess would be the case,
yes. But
we really don't know for sure. It would just be speculation at this point. But as someone who's been working in education for a long time, I would have to think that someone who's had some basic training as a teacher and had some experience as a teacher is probably going to be more effective even at the basics of classroom management than somebody who has only 60 credit hours in college. What's interesting about the change in the requirements the state legislature passed, I think it was last year, is the superintendents that I talked to said it didn't really have any effect on the supply of substitutes at all. So it was pushing on a wet noodle.
Yeah.
And are there known implications in terms of behavioral outcomes or classroom management or anything along those lines? I mean, there's the stereotype that
right. You
go crazy on the substitute teacher days. Any sign of that in the survey results or talking to folks?
We never did that.
I certainly didn't play bumper cars with a substitute in school. A lot of it's just anecdotal evidence, but you know, we know classroom management is sort of the prerequisite to having learning happening in the classroom. That if you don't have students, if students aren't focused on the learning process, then they're obviously not going to learn anything. I think it's a pretty safe to say, without a lot of hard data behind it, but it would be safe to say that substitutes, if they don't have experience managing students in the classroom, that means the students aren't going to be learning as well.
Any conflict, and you know, this is kind of between your research hat and your school board hat here, but any conflict that you saw with unions, you know, if we're going to pay substitute teachers more or have permanent substitute teachers, you know, how does that impact, full-time union teachers? And any, you understand where I'm going?
Yeah, I do. I didn't hear any negative statement. And the only things that we did encounter, again, just sort of by word of mouth, was that the teachers are also very concerned about this problem because they want to have the ability to go to professional development or to take a day off or, you know, if they're sick, right, they have to take care of a sick relative. So the thing that's really important to understand about the substitute labor market is that even if you completely solved any, quote, teacher shortage, unquote, you would still need a large pool of substitutes to make schools function. So it's not a situation where, you know, if you or I have to take a day, we can either ask someone else to do the work or we can put it off another day or two. You can't have a classroom of 25 or 30 students with no one instructing them and no one supervising them. Mm-hmm. So because we have to expect teachers are going to have to take some time out of the classroom for one reason or another, you're going to need that pool of substitutes to make that possible. So it's not just a reflection of a broader teacher shortage. That's certainly a contributor to the issue. But you could solve the teacher shortage problem and you would still need a lot of subs.
And just to go back to one of the first comments you made, didn't make a difference. Urban, rural, suburban, northern Michigan, southwest, southeast. This is a statewide problem.
It's a statewide problem. It's more severe in some areas or kinds of schools than others. But every region of the state and every kind of school reported having roughly the same kind of problem.
What kinds of districts have the worst problem with this?
The ones you'd expect, the disadvantaged school districts who tend to be higher percentage poverty, who tended to have we didn't look at achievement scores, but tended to have a higher percentage of ELL students. And so the more disadvantaged schools in terms of their economics or their demographic profiles, percentage of minority, they tended to have a bigger substitute problem. But we have to be a little careful about that because those tend to be larger schools. Mm-hmm. So they're going to need a demand for more substitutes.
Anyway. A certain percentage of teachers are going to be sick on any given day.
Yeah. So that's partly a function of that. It's partly a function of slightly higher teacher absenteeism rates, I'd imagine, for a variety of reasons. Disadvantaged school districts seem to have a greater propensity for school teachers to be out of the classroom. But there still appears to be something that's driving this, which is sort of, it's a harder school to teach at, or it's a more disadvantaged student population, so they're going to have a little more difficulty attracting substitutes. But again, all of this is sort of very tentative, very preliminary. It's what superintendents are telling us, and we really need to have more observational data, more detailed, rigorous quantitative and qualitative studies if we're going to be able to understand what's really happening in the classrooms.
Yeah. So the one cause that the superintendents identified was this issue about the retired teachers not being able to or not being incentivized to participate. What do we know about that? Are those perceptions reasonable? Why did we go down that path? And is there any possibility of reforming it?
That's a really good question that I would love to have an answer to. And I'm in the process of talking to some people at MDE and in the field trying to get a handle on that. This was something that came out during some focus groups that we did, that they said, oh, well, they changed the retirement law and suddenly we can't find retired teachers. So I'm really hesitant to get into a lot of details on that because it's very much a word of mouth sort of story. Yes. And I want to be careful about saying, oh, well, then that's definitely what's happening. But the statement that was made was that they made it more difficult, made greater penalties or at least more administrative hurdles to retire teachers to get hired directly by the district.
Yeah, I think you might find a bit of politics involved.
Sure there might be some of that.
In that decision in terms of certain animosities that have occurred over the last decade or two
between
a Republican-led legislature and the largest teachers union in the state and the notion of people double-dipping and all that goes along with it. But that certainly is a policy change that they could take a look at. I remember back in the day when school districts used to do this kind of work, there would be specific substitutes that a teacher had established a relationship with that he or she could call on and say, hey, I'm going to be out this day. Would you want to come and cover my class? And I think that's part of the issue here, too, is there are definitely, as you noted, the companies today cannot force someone to go and sub in a particular district. And I think we've lost a little bit of that relationship formula in terms of allowing school districts and teachers within those school districts to have almost a permanent substitute on call, so to speak, that if they need to be out, they know who to call. That person's more than willing and able to come in and take care of the class.
And what was really interesting in the survey is there are a lot of school districts that still do that, perhaps on a more informal basis. Mm-hmm. Okay. And most school districts are drawing the same substitutes on a regular basis still. They still have a sort of fixed pool of people that they can really count on. And one of the efforts that school districts have made to alleviate the substitute shortage is to try and strengthen those social bonds, to be more welcoming, to try and build those relationships. That is definitely something that they're working on. But I wouldn't say that school districts no longer have that direct relationship. We had some places some school districts where they said, oh yeah, our teachers will call someone and they may still end up getting routed through one of the companies. Mm-hmm. But informally that old system still exists to a certain degree on the ground.
Well, certainly it seems like it's a topic that deserves further research and work and policy and probably some policy changes.
I certainly think so.
Along the way, thank you for being here, and thanks for the work that you do both here on campus and here in the Lansing School District. Very appreciative.
Thank you very much.
Thank you all for being here. Again, appreciate the work and support collaboration of the folks here at WKER Studios, Russ White and crew. Appreciate our listeners, and join us next month on State of the State.